The unruffled, tranquilizing rhythm of Ray Lynch's Cloud Below Your Knees means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and it's time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston that is devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored, award-winning KPFT 90.1 FM, the coolest place on your dial where we spotlight a variety of tellers from starters to stars who share at least one thing in common. Each is an extraordinary teller, whose ability to take us on profound and sometimes fanciful journeys with remarkable stories end up in heart-rending narratives to enchanting folk tales. And then, sometimes they return us safely to the present. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, with a really raspy voice tonight because of really bad allergy season. I feel like I'm like the Wicked Witch of the West. Want to play a little ball, Scarecrow? That's what I sound like tonight, so bear with me. I'm a professor at University of Houston downtown, along with Roxy Russell, who last week, I understand, did a great job hosting guest teller Liz Rodwell. Is that right, Roxy? You did a great job?
I believe I did.
Yeah, well, you're not fired. Don't worry about it. You know, you're being paid a lot of money, like nothing.
So much money.
Don't worry about it. Absolutely. You know, tonight we're going to celebrate the art of lying, sort of. Because this Saturday night, April 5th, is the annual Liars Contest, sponsored by the terrific troupe that sponsored this show, the Houston Storytellers Guild, of which I am the past president and proud member. And few folks can get us into the lying mood better than this evening's guest teller and longtime SSG member. Sheila Starks Phillips is a consummate teller. She's been on the show a few times when it was called Story Time, when it was on once a month, and she's always been a crowd favorite. Her career has ranged from first grade teacher to author to zookeeper. She is on the traveling artist roster of Texas Commission on the Arts and a past recipient of the John Henry Falk Award. She's also been the featured teller on the Exchange Place at the National Storytelling Festival, as well as performing as a teller in residence twice at the International Storytelling Center. Both venues are located in Jonesboro, Tennessee. Now, Sheila's been mesmerizing audiences of all ages since 1990 by weaving wit and wisdom into her stories. And because she plays the guitar, bass, and ukulele, she has creatively united music with her extensive repertoire of tales. Every program and concert delivered by Sheila is special because every gig is tailored to her target listeners, a feat that only the best can master. And despite tonight's theme being how to lie like a bandit, the whole truth and nothing but is that Sheila is the best at what she does. Sheila, welcome.
Thank
I'm so glad you're here again, and you've been here before, and it's always, always a pleasure. Big time difference. I think last time it was, you didn't come here when it was at 6 a.m., but you came here when it was once a month, yes. 6 a.m. seemed to be devoted for people over 50, and somehow in the evening we have the average age of like 6, so it's really nice to have a mature person here who has found a way to stay up late at night. It's all past our bedtime, right? Okay. Nice to have a mature person here. Sheila, okay, before you tell us about your wonderful lie, tell us your wonderful lie, tell us a little bit about the history behind the Liars Contest, because it's a rich one.
Well, the Liars Contest started as a Houston Storytellers Guild program one night, just for fun. They decided very impromptu to decide to tell lies, and it was so successful they turned it into a public event.
Yeah, and it is fun. It really is fun.
Yeah.
And we don't want to give people the impression that lying is what we do for a living at the Storytellers Guild.
Yeah.
But lying is synonymous with the tall tale, and it is a lot of fun. Let's go ahead and hear a story. This will be fun.
Okay, let's do. Texas, as most of you know, has a long tradition of festivals. At any given time of the year, you can find a festival to celebrate something somewhere in the state. There's festivals for onions, there's strawberry festivals, there's arts festivals, renaissance festivals, there's storytelling festivals all over the state. We are a state that loves a good festival. Now, I grew up in Amarillo, up in the panhandle of the state, and Amarillo was always at the forefront as a festival giver, and you'll understand why when I remind you that tourism is the biggest industry in Amarillo, and the city fathers are constantly on the lookout for ways to entertain the hundreds of thousands of tourists that flock to Amarillo every year. They come in the summertime for the shrimp festival because nowhere else on earth are you going to find sweeter tasting shrimp than those that come out of the Gulf of Amarillo. Then the highlight of the winter season is the Prairie Dog Iditarod, where teams of prairie dogs pull little sleds from the courthouse steps in Amarillo all the way to Happy Texas, a distance of about 90 miles, and it's mostly through the mountains and takes them about 120 days, and sadly, not all of them make it because it's just too dangerous, too treacherous. And then there's that big 4th of July Hunter Hog Armadillo Stew Cook-Off Festival that brings in tourists from every state in the Union and foreign countries as well. We love a good festival up in Amarillo. Now, when I was a kid growing up, we had a mayor named Ralph Dallas. He was a good man and a very capable mayor, but the real driving force behind the mayor's office was his wife, Della Dallas. Now, Della and Ralph had one daughter named Dolly. Everybody called her Dolly Baby, and she was a real pretty girl in the face, but just a tad on the chunky side. Now, Della decided that Amarillo should have one more festival, and she tried to think of something that happened on a regular basis that she could base a festival around. And then, well, it hit her like a ton of bricks. She remembered that every year, on the first Saturday of May, the turkey vultures return to Paladura Canyon, which is right on the outskirts of Amarillo and is certainly a tourist attraction in its own right. So Della decided Amarillo should have a turkey vulture festival. Well, Mayor Ralph thought that was a grand idea, so she made a presentation to the city council, and they gave her the needed funds and their blessing, and she set right to work, forming all kinds of committees for decorations and for publicity and for food and all the things you have to have. Texas Monthly and Texas Highway Magazine that year did a multi-page spread of the upcoming Turkey Vulture Festival in their April issue. It's the most publicity they ever got for anything. Now, it has to be a queen to make a festival first race, so of course there was a queen's contest, and I have to tell you that Dolly Baby captured the queen's crown. Now, it was not so much how she looked in her swimsuit, if you know what I mean, but her talent absolutely knocked people out of their socks. She tap danced to the Colonel Bogey March, that's from the bridge on the River Kwai, while twirling a fire baton. What a lot of talent that girl had. Now, they also had activities to get the younger kids involved. They had a poster contest and a poetry contest. And as a matter of fact, a little boy in my fifth grade class won the poetry contest, and I can remember it like it happened yesterday. They had the event down at the high school auditorium, and, well, we kids would not have been more impressed had they had it at Carnegie Hall, because it was this huge, cavernous place. When I got there that night with my family, the place was packed. It was standing room only. My friend Timmy Stewart got there, and he was looking good. He had on a brand new pair of blue jeans with the crease right down the middle of his legs. He had on a white starched shirt, a little bow tie, had his hair all slicked back with Brill Cream. He was looking good. He strolled out on that stage like he did it every day of the world. He had a lot of composure, and he was just in the fifth grade. I still remember how his poem went. It went like this. Oh, turkey vulture with head so bald, see-through nostrils, and that's not all. Cleaning up both dale and hill, scarfing down the latest roadkill. Oh, nature's garbage men, we salute you. Without you, Lord knows what we'd do. We'd be up to our eyeballs and carcasses dead, doing our best to clear our heads of the terrible odor that accompanies such things. You've saved us from that. You truly are a king. Well, by the time he got through, people had jumped from their seats. They were cheering and hollering and pounding their boots on the floor. And I guess I don't need to tell you that Timmy Stewart won first prize, got a big old solid gold trophy, and a $25 war bond. We were so doggone proud of him. Now, the festival was going to kick off with a giant parade right down Polk Street, which is the main street in Amarillo. People had come from everywhere. They were stacked 4 and 5 deep on both sides of the street. The Amarillo High School Marching Sandy Band led off the parade and had the twirlers and the drum major. Then you had the cheerleaders with their pom-poms doing all kinds of fancy cheers. Then you had the drill team doing some real precision drilling. And behind them were all the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scout troops from the entire city marching very precisely. Behind them, all of the little leaguers in their brand new shirts because the season had just started. So they had on blue and green and purple and yellow shirts that said Blue Jays and Cardinals and Robins on their chest. Behind them were all the floats because every civic club in town had produced a float. So you had a float from the Kiwanis and the Lions and the Optimists and all those. But the most spectacular float of all was the Queen's float because the entire float and Dolly Baby's gown was made entirely of turkey vulture feathers. It had taken them weeks and weeks to collect enough. Now, the parade ended with the Will Rogers Range Riders on their horses, followed close behind by the street sweeper, which is how every parade in Amarillo always ends and does to this very day. Now, as soon as the parade was over, everybody went down into the canyon. It's exactly 17 miles from the center of downtown Amarillo. They parked Dolly Baby's float in the bottom of the canyon and surrounded her with an ROTC honor guard from the high school. And these young men stood at attention all day with their bayonets on their rifles while Dolly Baby signed autographs and gave her Queen's wave. Now, they had all kinds of special things going on. Had a little petting zoo for the smaller children, little lambs and goats and bunny rabbits. They had little carnival rides for the tiny children. And people had brought their entire families and big old baskets of lunch, and they were spreading them out on the ground. It was a festive family affair. Now, up on the rim of the canyon, vendors had set up their booths, and they were selling all the things you would expect to have at a festival, like T-shirts and tacos and cotton candy and armadillo legs and all those things you'd have at a festival. Now, the plan was the birds were due to arrive in the canyon at 5:30. You could set your watch by. It was like the swallows returning to Capistrano. So at 5 o'clock, Della gathered up all the school-aged children, and she lined them up on both sides of the road leading down into the canyon. Then she walked among them and she handed each child a raw piece of chicken. Some of them got a leg, some of them got a wing, some of them got a neck or a gizzard or a heart. And the plan was when the birds were sighted, Della would lead the children and they'd raise their raw chicken in the air, encouraging the birds to come in low as they entered the canyon. At that point, the band, the high school band, would begin playing the Turkey Vulture March, which had been written especially for the occasion by the high school band director. The drill team would release 20,000 balloons in the shape of a turkey vulture's head. The cheerleaders had developed a new cheer that went, "Give me a V, give me a U, give me an L," and it went on from there. And at that point, the mayor would wave his Stetson at the fire chief, who would put a match to the fireworks, and that would be the grand finale, and what a finale it promised to be. Everything was set. They sent a lookout up Amarillo's tree, and he was to signal back with a mirror. He got real quiet, deathly quiet. The band quit playing, the cheerleaders quit cheering, the drill team quit drilling. The vendors stopped hawking their wares. You could have heard a pin drop. The signal was received. We looked out over the horizon, and there were easily 50,000 turkey vultures coming in and coming in low. Della gave the signal. She and the children all raised their raw chicken in the air. When that lead bird dipped down to take that raw chicken out of Della's hand, instead of grabbing her by the chicken, he grabbed her by the wrist. Maybe he was hungry or maybe he was panicky. We will never, never know. He lifted her right off the ground. Now, she was just a little wisp of a thing, and he was able to carry her for about 20 feet before he dropped her right in that long line of children, half of whom were screaming and crying in terror. That first child hit the next, who hit the next, who hit the next, who hit the next, who hit the next. It was like a long line of dominoes all the way down into the canyon. 250 kids lying in the dirt, screaming and crying in terror, holding raw pieces of chicken. When that last child was hit, he ran into one of those ROTC honor guard that was standing at attention with his bayonet on his rifle, and as he fell forward, the point of that bayonet bayonet hit Dolly Baby in her ample rear end as she was giving her queen's wave, and she screamed and threw out her arms, knocking the lit cigar out of the mouth of the police chief who was driving her float. Now, that lit cigar went up in the air, and it rolled over and over and over and came down right in the middle of the fireworks. Talk about your rocket's red glare. That whole thing went up at once. You had Big Bertha bombs. You had Roman candles. You had Amarillo tornado blasters. The whole thing up at once. What a show, what a show, what a show. The turkey vultures, meanwhile, were so put off by that turn of events that they drew up in their flight and flew all the way to Lubbock. And they have never, ever returned to Palo Duro Canyon or Amarillo, and that's exactly the way I remember it happened.
Yay, very good. Okay, see, we love strong documentation. That is beautiful. Now, I love some of your stories about Amarillo, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. But, you know, it occurred to me, although it doesn't sound really profound, that one way to come up with a great lie is to take a concept and take everything that could not possibly address that issue over here. So, you know, what can't happen in Amarillo? Whatever can't happen there, we put that over there, right?
Right.
And then somehow find a way of incorporating it. So if I said I took my first mountain climbing lesson in Amarillo, right? Okay. Right, and I did, of course. I did, and I try to make that very convincing. And, you know, Amarillo was the first city to invent cultural diversity. In 1904, on their menu in one of their coffee shops, they had Coke and Dr. Pepper on the same menu. They called that diversity, and it's been expanding ever since, right?
Right.
This is Hank Rubicek with Roxy Russell, working the boards, and you are listening to guest teller Sheila Starks Phillips deliver one hell of a fish story on So What's Your Story, only on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 Houston, or kpft.org for those of you using that avenue. But whatever road you took to tune in, we are happy that you are here. You know, obviously, we're not advocating that we lie at every turn. We're looking at lies as the core of our fun-filled yarns. After all, amplification, a very important feature in storytelling, is really a storyteller's license. We make the hurt a little deeper, the kiss a little longer, and the heart pound a little faster. And that's what this More Fun Than the Law Allows contest is all about on Saturday night. It's about the tall tale, a humorous and good-natured and sometimes even spooky story with unbelievable elements. And oftentimes, the best tale is told as to make the narrator seem to be a part of the story. And Sheila, I think that you really do that extremely well. I love your story, as you know, about the other one you tell about your hometown, Amarillo, and how you had a tree in the front yard. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. It's the only tree in town.
It was the only tree in town, mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And you had like a fortress around it or security mm-hmm. guards,
right.
Something like that. I love that story. Now, when you create a story like that, talk to us a little bit about the process. In other words, okay, you have a topic. You want to deal with Amarillo. How do you develop it?
Well, I have a whole series of Amarillo stories because Amarillo lends itself to exaggeration because of the flatness of the landscape, the wind blowing all the time, the lack of natural growing trees, all of those sorts of things. Someone actually said to me one day that the only tree in Amarillo had been in his front yard when we were just kidding around about Amarillo where he had also grown up. And I stole that line from him and then expanded on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to come from a city that's easy to make fun of.
It is.
I mean, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, right? Okay. Look, Friedrich Nietzsche said, "I'm not upset that you lied to me. I'm upset that from now on I can't believe you." How's that one? I think that one says it all. Sheila, tell us a little bit about the where, the time, and the cost of the Liars event this Saturday night.
Okay. And this year's Liars Contest is this very Saturday night, April 5th. It's going to be in the Dillon Hall at Houston Baptist University. The tickets are just $10. You spend that much going to a movie, and just $8 if you're a member of the Houston Storytellers Guild.
And the find it in the sofa. We can find that money in the sofa.
You can. And fun begins at 7 p.m.
Very good. Thank you so much. You know, when we talk about the Liars Contest, we are talking about some of the most skilled artists in town, and I am not kidding. I mean, the idea of creating a story totally from scratch, creating it from your own experience base, and doing the kind of aesthetic orchestration that storytellers do in order to mesmerize you into oblivion and engage you with their creative wit is not to be believed. Roxy, what was the biggest whopper you ever told? You must have lied in your life at one time or another.
I have.
Have you? Yeah.
Okay. But I could never lie to my mother, so because my mother could just see right through my lies. So
you've never lied to your mother? Or you mean you've tried?
I've tried, but I've never been successful. I want to say the most successful lie I've ever told was, Hank, please don't be mad at me, but it was to one of my professors. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take the final early, and so I told a little fib about, relative.
Yeah.
Being sick, so.
Yeah, well, don't worry about that. I mean, I have students who have 14 grandmothers. They just forget to tell me that, the 12th one just died, and they kind of don't keep count. So
absolutely.
Don't worry about it. But we're not going to lie about the Houston Storytellers Guild, right?
Why would anyone do that? Why would anyone do that? If you want to learn great ways to tell stories or just enjoy the art of storytelling, get to the Houston Storytellers Guild monthly story swap while hanging around the nicest, most supportive people in town. Monthly swaps are held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the St. Andrew's House, a beautiful venue located at 1811 Heights Boulevard. And please check out the Houston Storytellers Guild website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happenings, like information about the annual Liars Contest this Saturday, April 5th. And visit us at our So What's Your Story Facebook page for great information about storytelling, and please like us on the way out.
Thank you, Roxy. I appreciate it. And we're going to give you directions to HBU in just a couple of minutes, but you can always get on their website and get the directions. And believe me, the directions are pretty clear. Trust me, I gave Custer his directions. I have no sense of directions whatsoever. The guild meetings, I want to talk about that for a moment. Sheila's been a very long-time member, and it's really grown considerably.
It has.
Has it not?
Yeah.
What do you attribute that to? I know there's a revival of storytelling, but what do you think?
People love stories. They just do stories. I think the main thing is for us to get the word out of where we are. Some people know where to go, and that you're always welcome. We welcome anybody that walks in the door, happy to have you there, and you never have to tell a story. You just sit there and enjoy others, or you can try out your own stories.
Yeah. And it's only $25 a year to be a member, and you are you're the treasurer. So
I am.
You're the one that collects all the bread. And do we have a special student rate? Did we come up with a special student rate?
We do. And also, if you join the guild to go to the Liars Contest, it only costs you $8.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, we're going to talk more about the Liars Contest. We're not giving that up at all. Right now, you are listening to So What's Your Story with Dr. Hank and Roxy on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. You are enjoying award-winning Texas teller Sheila Starks Phillips telling us how much fun it is to lie, assuming we're talking about the annual Liars Contest this Saturday night at 7 o'clock at Houston Baptist University. I came across this great little story that I have to share with you. Roxy, I'm sure that you're not going to remember this, but Art Linkletter, you don't even know who I'm talking about.
I do.
Had this great show, Children Said the Darndest Things. And this is one of those stories. This is a woman, a totally mature woman, who tells the story about the story that she told when she was a child on Art Linkletter. And she says this, I'm 5'3" tall and pleasingly plump. After I had a minor accident, my mother accompanied me to the emergency room. The nurse asked for my height and weight, and I blurted out 5'8", 125. While the nurse pondered this information, my mother leaned over to me and said, sweetheart, you're not on the phone. Now she changed it. Now she said, you're not on the internet, because of course everybody lies on the internet. Now I thought that was pretty clever, because the internet gives us an opportunity to just lie through our teeth. I mean, honest to God. I mean, I was on dating sites, okay? There's no possible way I would recognize any picture that I saw. One time I'm looking at this picture, I'm walking through a bar looking for this woman. I mean, I'm not Ray Charles. I know what I'm looking for. And I see a person who I think is her, but it's not. And I leave, and suddenly I hear, psst, psst. Now, you know that can't be good news. You know that. And this person was 15 years older. Let's just say she weighed a different amount than she did on the photograph. And I just could not possibly imagine anybody would want to get away with that. So the internet, I think, is just a great way to lie. I just wanted to share that with you. And so is Facebook. No offense, Roxy, but come on. Do people tell the truth
yes,
on Facebook?
There is such a thing that has become very popular that is called catfishing, where people
catfishing.
Catfishing, where mm-hmm. people lie completely. They will start a fake profile, pretend there's someone else, pick a picture up off Google, and they will pretend to be someone else for right. years and years.
I see. Yeah, very, very
I've
nice.
Never done that, so don't even say anything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, but you know so much about it, Roxy. You're so articulate.
There's a TV show.
How about Tip for the Teller? We got one tonight, huh? Is there anyone out there who thinks that I know something about storytelling? Anybody have a question?
Well, lucky for you, Hank, there is someone who does have a question. Jerry from Houston asks, Dr. Hank, what do you mean by a voice in a story?
A voice in a story. Well, I can give you some voices from The Godfather. How about Fredo? I'm smart, not like they say. Or how about Frankie? Yeah, they asked me, Michael Corleone did this, and Michael Corleone did that, and I said, yeah, sure. But I have a feeling that's not what you're talking about. Besides, I do terrible voices, especially with allergies. When it comes to a voice describes various aspects of a writer's expression in a story. And narrative voice belongs to the persona, whether it's the characters or the author. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about the narrative as the recounting of a story. So voices can evolve accordingly. First and third person, active and passive, and past present are also voice options. Tone and style tend to fuel the voice chosen. But that's a great question. And I don't know what you do for a living, but I got to tell you something. I love the fact that so many of you are teachers. And Jerry, if you're an educator, so God bless you for showing up, because I love the fact that so many of our educators listen to the show and really do take some good information about storytelling. And if you got a question about storytelling, what should people do, Roxy?
If you have a question about storytelling you want Dr. Hank to answer on the air, have a story idea, or would like to be a guest on So What's Your Story, send it to ruby.story@gmail.com. Now that is ruby.story@gmail.com, and we will get back to you.
Thank you. Next week we have another one of your moth finds. Chris Gorman and Harwood Teller, they're in there. Wave, everybody. They already have apprehension. I'm not going to ask them to speak, right? Now, you claim that they're going to knock our socks off. Is that right? Is that what you guys
yes,
say?
Yes, yes, yeah. I do.
What a cliche.
Yes.
I love it. Right. Sheila, it's tough to answer this question in just a moment, but we're going to skip the one online because we talked about that a little bit. But tell us a little bit about how people can get a hold of you if they want to book you for parties or gigs. Can you tell us a little bit about how they can contact you?
I can indeed, and I'm so happy that you asked me. Easter is coming, so let me promote my Easter book a little bit. I have a wonderful Easter book geared to children pre-K through third grade entitled The Extraordinary Surprise. Easter is almost here, and that'd make a wonderful gift. I also have several CDs. All of these things can be purchased on my website at www.sheilaphillips.com. The website has all of my contact information. My email, easy to remember, zoolady@airmail.net.
Thank you, Sheila. This was so wonderful having you. We're going to get off in just a second. Scooter is coming up next with The Inner Side. Don't you dare leave. We want you to ease into the weekend riot, so always tune in to So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM every Thursday night at 10 o'clock. And right now, this is Dr. Hank telling you to keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank reminding you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. See you Saturday night.